Welcome to Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie, joined by Darren, and we bring you the news, reviews and recommendations of the latest theatre.
We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, and the next hot ticks.
I'm Joel Harper-Jackson, and you're listening to Theatre Audience Podcast.
Happy Easter, Natalie.
Happy Easter, Darren. Did you get any eggs?
I did, got a few. I did actually buy myself a few as well, because I do like a good old Easter egg. Quality chocolate, though, not something cheap from the lesser chocolatiers.
The lesser chocolatiers. Oh, goodness me, you chocolate snob.
I'm a tea snob and a chocolate snob.
Oh, well, you know, the diabetic here looks at her Easter eggs, loves the mini eggs and the Lindor and can't and shouldn't, but has already eaten one egg.
Oh, well, you know what? You've got to enjoy your life at the end of the day. So, yeah. I mean,
well, exactly.
Did the Easter bunny bring you anything else not edible?
I don't know what else the Easter bunny would bring me, to be fair. Lots of interviews.
Jewelry.
Lots of interviews. We've been really busy. I've done 5 shows in 6 days and 3 interviews in that same period of time. It's been quite crazy.
Yeah, it's been crazy for me too. I met up with Joel and Elizabeth, who are standing at the Sky's Edge, cast members, Victoria Hamilton, Barrett, which was wonderful chat with her. You spoke to Caris Anderson. How was that?
It was incredible. I had an amazing time chatting to her just before the show. We were due to do about a 20-minute interview, but we went on 30. It was incredible. She gave me so much insight into her life and how that has prepared her for her role as Tina. And we talked about manifestation, mental health as well. It was brilliant. Really, really good. I cannot wait to air that interview. And also, I went over to For Black Boys Who Have Considered Suicide When the Hue Gets Too Heavy, which we're now calling FBB for short, just to make it quicker. I interviewed 3 of the cast. So I interviewed Toby, Posey and Mo. And we had a brilliant chat at the Garrick backstage just before they went on. So, yeah, brilliant time. Can't wait to air these interviews. We're so busy at the moment. Loads of opening nights and galas as well. Opening night, Mind Mangler, Red Pitch. There's been a lot. It's been crazy.
Yeah, it has. And this week I saw the wonderful The Divine Mrs. S at Hampstead Theatre with the brilliant Rachel Sterling, which we'll talk about in a future podcast, because right now we need to talk about shows which are coming up, as in closing soon. And we're going to start with Breeding. Breeding at the New King's Head Theatre. It's an interesting title. Interesting because as a gay man, it has all sorts of inclinations there. But it was a wonderful play, I have to say, Natalie. I laughed, I cried. It's a 75-minute straight through, one act, pretty much perfect play. It's a three-hander, 2 actors and an actress. And it's basically following the story of Zeb and Owen, their life. They've got together, they got married. They're now wanting a child. So they're looking to adopt a child. And it's very funny. It's a beautiful tale of 2 guys that are falling in love. And now they want the next thing to come into their relationship, which is almost the same as any relationship, really. I mean, you know, look at heterosexual relationships, gay relationships. You know, nothing's that different anymore, to be fair. You know, obviously, same-sex marriage and stuff has come into it the last almost, I think it's 16 years now. It might be a bit longer than that. Maybe it's even 20 years. You know, so not only do heterosexual relationships end in divorce, so do gay relationships. Aren't we lucky? But anyway, this relationship doesn't end in divorce. But what it does center around is the moments between the 2 guys when they're getting closer and closer and closer to adopting their first child, and the child's implications of it, and also the things that happen, like the certain questions that they're asked by the counsellors and stuff with regards to prepping them for their panel interviews. And you're like, if only everybody was given this kind of questionnaire survey before they had their own child, there'd be a lot less kids in therapy, I'd say, or a lot less kids in orphanages or all that kind of stuff. It's very interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, you could go out, meet someone, get drunk, have sex, end up being a father, without any other care or thoughts, you know? But if you want to adopt a child, put it into a loving home, it's like a hurdle, a race, you know? Which is, in some respects, of course, it has to be done. You can't just, you know, go into a, I don't know, a shop and pick up a child, as it were, like you can do an animal in a pet shop, like me and my guinea pigs, without any form of paperwork or anything like that, or even actually assessing that I'm okay to look after an animal. But yeah. So Natalie, what do you think?
Yeah. So, I mean, years and years ago, we're talking, well, probably about 14 years ago, I did look into the possibility of adopting a second child because, well, I won't get into the details, but yeah, the amount of paperwork that exists in order to do that is phenomenal. Understandably, but yeah, it's a minefield. There is so much legal documentation and paperwork and forms and applications and interviews and meetings. It's understandably really a long drawn out process.
And to be fair, it kind of should be, but you got to bear in mind that you go through all that and it could take months, even up to a year or even longer, and then you could be told no. I mean, that's the thing, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, I'm not paternal. I've never been interested in having children. So for me, it's like completely out of the equation. But you see a play like this and you it's such an important play, I feel. It's brilliantly written by Barry McStay, who stars as Owen. And directed by Tom Radcliffe, and it was done originally in the Old Kingsley Theatre as part of a season of kind of queer works when Tom Radcliffe was a visiting AD there, and they've extended it slightly, they've refreshed it and stuff, and yeah, I mean the whole cast, I mean Dan Nicholson who plays Zeb, and Namid May, I hope I got her name right, who plays Beth, all brilliant. I mean, yeah. I couldn't fault it, really, in some respects. The staging was nice, very simple, but effective. Yeah, the performances were great. I really believed the relationship between Owen and Zeb. Yeah, I believed everything about their relationship, the trials, tribulations, the fights they had, the loving moments they had, all those things leading up to them wanting to adopt this child. I won't go on any further about it because I don't want to spoil it for anyone who's going to see it, but you may need a tissue for the end. That's what I'm going to say. But no, I really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. Yeah. I hope Kingsley Theatre program more works like this. And I hope to see more stories like this on the stage because I think it's really, really important.
Cool. And how long is it on till?
Oh, again, it's all very limited season in these places. Mm. It's only on to the 14th of April.
So hurry up. Get your ticket if you're interested.
Yeah, I hope so.
And
I hope it has
one.
A life. They're on after, actually. Goes and does something else. I'd like to see a film version of it, actually, but you never know.
Okay. So,
yeah. Mm. And then we both saw Sister Act, but at different times.
Different times. You went to the press night. I was at the press night for something else, Red Pitch or Black Boys. I can't remember. But it's all a blur. There's been so many galas and press nights. We've been completely double booked. But yeah, we both saw Sister Act. Obviously, you'd been to the fun event as well, which was also on the same night that I was seeing something else, which looked such fun. You go first. Tell me your thoughts, my love.
Well, to be fair, it's the fourth time I've seen the show, the second time in this incarnation. So the third time I saw it was at the Apollo Hammersmith. I think it was last year, actually. It might have been the year before. And
2022, it says in the
2022. Wow, yeah. It's nearly 2 years.
Yeah, I know. It's
again, Beverly Knight was playing the marvelous Dolores, and it was a refreshing show, I think, when I saw it last time because they had changed the opening numbers, they had kind of revamped bits and pieces here and there. And it's interesting because it's such a big musical and being in such a big venue, it kind of lent itself to it. And I think the same happened with the Dominion, where it is now. It is a big musical and it deserves a bigger space. Natalie, what do you think about that?
Yeah, so the thing about the Dominion Theatre, and I don't know, something about the Dominion Theatre, I am yet to come out of a show that I've seen at the Dominion Theatre absolutely buzzing. And there's so many pieces of theatre recently where I have come out and I have been literally blown away, buzzing, goosebumps from the opening number. Is it because the Dominion Theatre is so vast that it just has no soul? I feel that the theatre, for me, is just soulless. It really is. Like, Bat Out of Hell was there, White Christmas.
Elf the Musical.
Elf the Musical I didn't see, but Prince of Egypt. Although Prince of Egypt I really enjoyed, but it was predominantly, you know, there was so much movement and dance, vast cast. I think that kind of filled the stage. I don't know, just something for me personally. I can see the enjoyment. I can see the, you know, everyone around me. It's very much, I don't know. I came out and I was just, this is so mainstream. Maybe I'm just a little bit more. I don't know. I don't know what it was, Darren. Just some things for me weren't landing. And that's just me, my personal opinion. All the people around me, and obviously theatre audience podcasts, we think about, you know, the perspective of different audiences. It was very much the crowd there on the night that I went. You went press night. I wish I'd come on press night. I think it would have been a very, very different vibe. And I think I probably, with you, would have got sucked into the excitement of it more, maybe. Not sure. But I had amazing tickets. So thank you to Royal PR. And I was in the stalls. But I don't know. It's one of those mainstream shows. It's this audience. I think I get, you know how people get on the road and they get road rage? I walk in, I'm like, oh, a mainstream show. Audience are going to behave badly. I'm not happy. Woman next to me, or across the aisle, she was on her phone for ages until the usher came and told her. Rustling paper, you know, all of this. And all of these things, just, you know, this is nothing to do with the show itself. It's just me.
I know. It's interesting. Audience behaviour is something that we've talked about quite a lot. And people talk a lot about it, actually, on the socials. And I just don't get the whole phone thing. Just put it away. If you're not interested in the show, leave. Like, I mean, this was actually a screening, not so much a show, but I know recently when I went to the premiere event for the last season of the Crown, where we saw the last episode, there's two women in front of me and they were chatting, like talking to, like nonstop, like, and I, in the end, I was with a friend of mine, Bashenka, and we were getting so agitated. And so we just said, listen, if you're not interested in watching this, leave. You know, it's all that. It's like, come on. And then they start barking back, you know, as if we're being rude to them. You're like, oh my God, come on. I actually remember I saw, it was called Peter and Alice. You know, the play about Alice in Wonderland? It had Judi Dench in it. It had like Ben Wilshaw. And the tickets were expensive. I mean, it's Judi Dench. I think it's actually the last time. No, I've seen on stage since in a Kenneth Branagh show. But, you know, you had to fight for these tickets. It was so hard to get. And these couple in front were on their phones playing games. I mean, you got Judi Dench on the stage and you're playing a little game on your iPhone. Come on.
It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't make any sense. It's like, why are you there? You know, the ticket prices for these kind of shows are not cheap. So it begs belief that someone could sit there. And it wasn't just a few minutes. Fair enough if she was in the middle of writing something very important just as the lights go down and then her phone's away. But it was for a good whack. It was like 20 minutes because it had annoyed me for a bit and then I'd got involved in the storyline. And then when the usher came down, I'm like, oh my God, she was still on the phone. I just couldn't believe it. But anyway, that's nothing to do with the show itself.
No, I get that. But going back to Sister Act of the show, I mean, again, like I said, I've seen it four times. I'm gutted, though, because the first two times I saw it, I was supposed to have Whoopi Goldberg. And for whatever reasons, it didn't happen. But obviously, the replacements are ace and it's been fantastic. But I do love Beverly Knight. I've been a good friend of hers for a very long time. And I've seen everything she's done. And although I have to say Sylvia, for me, is still her best role yet. But, you know, Ruth Jones playing the Mother Superior, not as good for me as Jennifer Saunders did it at the Apollo. Jennifer Saunders, for me, was comedy gold and worked in that role so, so well. Ruth Jones did her own version of it and it was great. But I think after seeing Jennifer Saunders play that part...
Yeah, I mean, I love Jennifer Saunders, so I would love to see her in that role. I mean, this for Ruth Jones, obviously people know her from Gavin and Stacey, and this is her West End debut. So all credit to her. I didn't even know she was really a singer, to be fair. And I think she, you know, she was great, but I wanted more. And the problem is, you're with an iconic character like Ness from Gavin and Stacey, this is also part of the whole mainstream audience thing. A lot of people have come specifically to see these stars, haven't they? And a lot of people have come to see Ruth Jones, and they're wanting her to be Ness. And I think there's a slight fight with her between, you know, this character that she's playing. She's using her Welsh accent, obviously, and the audience are wanting her to go into her Ness-ness. And there was one moment when she did. There was a moment that happened when she's solo on stage on her own. Someone heckled something. She stopped and then she just paused and went, "Hey," and did her big sort of Welsh Ness thing. The audience erupted, and that's clearly what they want from her. And that's really tough as Ruth Jones, the actress, trying to play a different character. So I almost wish she'd done an American accent and really gone into that character. Because it was always like a little internal fight, I feel, with her as the actress.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But what's interesting as well, I don't know if on your performance she said the same thing, likelihood is she did. She actually said something like, you know, "I'm originally from Wales, been here 30, you know, like, so she actually set up that the Welsh accent is because she is from Wales and she's, you know, living in New York, and that's that. I'd rather she stuck to her own accent than try and do an awful American, I have to say, for that one. I don't think Jennifer Saunders did that. I think she just kept her own. And I think sometimes it's okay because people travel around the world, you know, because they're in an American-based show doesn't mean they're from America. But I have to say, Leslie Joseph playing Sister Mary Lazarus was brilliant. I mean, she does her rap number, loved it. You know, I thought she was great. Lamar, I think he only sang one song. And coming from a singer, I thought that was a bit of a shame. But again, Clive Rowe playing Eddie Souther, the good old friendly cop. Great, great work there. And a big shout out to Carl Maloney playing the Monsignor O'Hara. You know, a bit of camp joy on the stage thing, you know, does us all the world of good. And it's great to see Alison Jeer back on stage as well, playing Mary Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, I could appreciate all these individual performances. I just, I don't know, something. I've seen so much beautiful, amazing stuff. And, you know, it's a great, fun show. Loads of people will go and see this and absolutely love it. I felt that, I don't know, is it a storyline about nuns? Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a storyline about nuns just doesn't do anything for me. It's a bit like The Green-Faced Witch. Something, you know, like Wicked, an incredibly popular show that's gone on for years and years. I've still got Grotbags trauma. So I don't like The Green-Faced Witch. I don't know whether it's just the nuns. I wanted all the nuns' habits to come off and then be in sparkly outfits, but they look like dancing Quality Street at the end. I don't know. I really struggled.
To be fair, you've not seen the films, have you?
I have not seen the film. And there's a reason for that. It was one of the most popular films. It was in 1992. I never watched it. Why? I don't know. I love Whoopi Goldberg, but I just thought, a film about nuns, not for me.
Have you seen Nuns on the Run with Robbie Coltrane?
No, not interested.
Oh, it's so much fun. I'd love to see that as a kind of like parody musical or something. Nuns on the Run, that's ace. Similar kind of storyline, but not really. It's nuns it's crooks in disguise as nuns to kind of get away from being captured and whatever else.
You go to that one on your own, yeah.
Very different to Sister Act, but at the same time, similar kind of thing about hiding out in a convent. But anyway, moving on from that, you went to opening night. Now, I want to say something about that first. Opening night with Sheridan Smith. I had friends that went to the first few previews and absolutely slaughtered it. And if you look at the reviews, you know, it's definitely been a Marmite show. I mean, you've given it a 5-star. Yeah. I mean, God, you must have really enjoyed it.
So here's the thing. Theatre is completely subjective. I knew that you loved Sister Act. I don't want to slate it publicly, but it just so wasn't for me on so many levels. I love Beverly Knight. I love Ruth Jones. I'm excited for when Alexandra Burke takes over. Lamar, I love. I've watched him in concert. I've been to see him in, you know, small venue concerts. And I was excited to go and see him, then forgot he was in it. And then about 10 minutes in went, oh my God, that is Lamar. Because obviously he looked completely different and he's playing an older character and a villain and acting. And it's all a very different experience. But yeah, it is subjective. And here's the thing. So I went to the opening night of opening night and then later on in that week watched Sister Act. And they couldn't have been more different for me. And it is really interesting. I know that some of the reviews have not been great for opening night, particularly previewing, like you say, people have been to see it. And I was thinking, oh, I'm not sure what to expect. Really not sure what to expect. So anyway, I absolutely loved it. But I could tell as I was watching it that this is very much, and I think like Sister Act, it's Marmite. You either absolutely love it and you're with it, or you hate it. And another thing about that Sister Act is the two people that were behind me were absolutely loving it. You know when someone overloves something so loudly laughing that actually I think that deadened my enjoyment as well, because you're kind of thinking, well, why are they finding that so funny? It's almost like, you know, sometimes when you end up in front of the director and the director's laughing, or Shakespeare, when people are laughing before the joke comes because they know something so well, it was that kind of feel a bit. But anyway, opening night, John Cervantes, a new musical. This is over at the Gielgud Theatre, and this is running until the 27th of July, so plenty of time to go and see it. I've got some interviews lined up, which I'm really excited about, with Amy Lennox and Benjamin Walker in the production, directed by Ivo van Hoem, and the music and lyrics by Rufus Wainwright.
Can I just say something about I do find him, like Jamie Lloyd, a little bit like kind of hit and miss. Like sometimes he really nails it and other times doesn't quite get there. But what I admire about those directors is they try things and they kind of do things that aren't necessarily the norm, especially for UK theatre. If they did their stuff in Germany, it'd be praised in a very different way because they accept things that are alternate. But the thing I have a problem with Ivo is the projections. Projections are everything. Every single thing he does has some projections. Like, you know, A Little Life, the story is strong enough. You don't need all of the razzmatazz that he put around it. And that's what annoyed me about seeing A Little Life. It kind of was distracting for me. So what about for opening night? I mean, did it work?
Yeah, so it's really interesting that you should make that comparison with Jamie Lloyd. And as you know, we loved Sunset Boulevard. Loved it. We did not like the play about the bird. So really contrasting. And for this, the use of projection really worked, because what they've done is, so a little bit about the storyline without giving too much away, but we're in rehearsals and there's the leading lady, that's our Sheridan Smith, and she confronts personal tragedy that happens, and all other tragedies that have gone on in her life. And it's a rehearsal of a play leading up to opening night. So we've got these kind of breakdowns of 3 days till opening night. Something happens. She's really struggling with connecting with the character that's been written. You've got the author in the room, who is almost not quite specified, but probably a little bit autobiographical. And so it's this intensity of the preparation. She's got relationships on and off stage with different people, an ex that's in the cast, a lover, all of this. So there's layers and layers, and it's really exciting for me. I've always enjoyed a play within a play or something about rehearsal. But yeah, the projection, how this worked was because they were using, it was about the actress having a documentary being made about her whilst in rehearsal. So, you know, a bit like you've got the motive and the cue, you've got the rehearsal leading up to the performance, there's similarities there. And so all the projection came from the camera crew. So it was like really intense moments in the rehearsal room where it like zooms into her face and stuff like that. And it's being projected on the back and projected on the side screens. So I think really cleverly done. And also there's this whole feel during the performance and of the rehearsal room mirroring the boxing ring of her life as she sort of battles through her demons and thinks about loves past and present. And it really magnifies in on her face. So in a similar way to Jamie Lloyd with Shirtsey in Sunset Boulevard.
Because there was originally a film, Opie Knight, which yes. Regina Rowlands.
1971.
When it was. Oh, wow. Regina Rowlands yeah. starred in then playing the, I'm guessing the character that Sharon Smith plays. But yeah, no. Okay. Shall I go and see it?
Yeah, definitely. I loved it. I mean, some incredible performances from Sheridan Smith, from Hadley Fraser, from Nicola Hughes, from John Marquez, and Amy and Benjamin as well. I really enjoyed this. And, you know, I wrote on our Insta that it's a haunting, life-affirming, soul-searching exploration of an artist on the edge. And she really, what I loved about her performance is she really showed sort of like the paradox between a woman who is trying to be strong, but she's also incredibly fragile inside. So I do think with regards to this production, I'd be interested to start reading some of other people's reviews now and seeing where that has landed. Because for me, as a woman who is in her mid-40s, I really identify with some of the parts of the fragility, but also trying to be strong all the time and powering through and resilience. I really identified with the character in this play. So where other people have marmited it and not liked this production, I wouldn't be surprised if they're just in a different realm or different target market. But having said that, I spoke to a friend of mine. She's in her mid-20s and she absolutely loved it. She was blown away and really, 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 really enjoyed the production. So I think it's interesting. It's always different when, you know, when you go and see a new musical and you don't know any of the songs as well. It hits in a different way. It's almost like a play with music, but it is a musical. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting to know. But going back to what you said with regards to Sheridan and the character she's played, it's very much how I feel about how she is in her life, and also the choices she makes with her shows. I mean, you know, anything from Funny Girl through to Shirley Valentine most recently. I do think she's one of the actresses that you can bank on in the sense of getting your return in the box office, because she's one of the few actresses that actually sells tickets and sells out tickets as well. And also she's a damn good performer. You know, when she's on it, she's on it. Obviously the past is Funny Girl. She had a bit of a breakdown during that time. That's not who she is now. She's obviously matured, grown up more. And you saw that in Shirley Valentine, which you didn't see, did you? But I loved that show, Shirley Valentine.
No, I didn't. But I love the play and I can see very clearly how she would be able to embody the character. But yeah, as you say, with her having that breakdown, and I mean, the irony is that is what this actress has during the rehearsal process leading up to her opening night. So, you know, you can really feel that fragility come through. She's obviously emotion memorying it and it's all there. It's raw. And I thought it was beautiful. I really, really did. But you know, like you say, it's Marmite. I loved this. I would give this 5-star. Sister Act, just not for me. I think Sister Act is too pantomime for me. And you know, I hate pantomime. But yeah, I love a cheesy musical. You know, like Bronco Billy. I absolutely loved it. Loved it. I didn't know what to expect. I was like, a musical about a cowboy, really not for me. And even when you were talking about it so effusively, I was like, yeah, this is a Darren show. I think I probably wouldn't enjoy it. But I went, I adored it. And there's not long to get your tickets for that. If you're, you know, I think we've got a week left now. Yeah, on Bronco
Billy.
Yeah,
Bronco Billy. And I obviously got an interview coming up, which we're putting on a podcast very soon, hopefully, with Victoria Hamilton Barrett, who's hilarious. I loved having my talk with her. And obviously, you know, you were chatting away to Taryn. Moving on from opening night was another opening night I went to on a 2-day kind of, it was billed as a concert version of a show called Wild About You, but it was beyond a concert. It was so wonderfully staged. And just for two performances, they put a lot of effort, a lot of work into it. Now, this is the story of a woman called Olivia when she finds herself in hospital with limited memory. And basically, she must dig out certain things about her past to work out who she is, why she's there, and all that kind of stuff. And it was a wonderful new musical written by Chelina Kennedy and Eric Holmes. And the producer, Brian Spector, I had an interview with him on a previous podcast, who told us a lot more about the show and stuff. It starred Eric McCormick, you may know from Will and Grace, Rachel Tucker. Now, Rachel Tucker, didn't you interview her in the past?
Yeah, I interviewed Rachel briefly a couple of years back, and it was on The Pirate Queen, which was at the Coliseum. And this also was a staged concert. And I managed to interview about 7 members of the cast. There was like a press event. I was in the rehearsal room. She did a most incredible rehearsal and then a mic drop moment. And Hannah Waddingham was in the room as well. Yeah, it was brilliant. Really, really good. She's a phenomenal performer. But I've also seen her in Come From Away.
Yeah, I've obviously Come From Away. I mean, I've worked with her on a charity single I did back in 2015, where she was singing and did a flash mob with like 100 West End performers and stuff. So I actually met her in a dressing room while she's being greened up to go on stage as Elphaba. So it's very random. But it was great seeing her back on stage. Todrick Hall flew over to play the role as well. And Jamie Moscato, you may know from Moulin Rouge. I don't know if you saw him in that when you saw Moulin Rouge. Oliver Thompson, who again I've worked with before on Disaster the Musical. And Tori Allen Martin, who was wonderful. And she actually reminded me of you. So if you look her up, you'll see. When she came up on stage, I thought, oh my God, it's Natalie. You know, the long hair, the tall, like the kind of this elegance, you know, this whole kind of like vibe about her was, oh my God, it's Natalie. It's Natalie on stage. So like I said, it was just 2 performances. It was billed as a concert, but it was way beyond that. And it's almost like a tryout. They're trying to work out, you know, what to do with it, where it should go, that kind of stuff. So it was a world premiere with regards to how it was staged and stuff. The album itself is on Spotify. You can hear it. But I really enjoyed it. Again, a little bit chalk and cheese. Like some people really liked it, like myself. Other people weren't so sure about it. One of the things was as well, it was so well done in the sense of their performances. There's no way they would be able to manage 8 shows a week. It was so explosive. You know, if you saw that in a proper run, it would be much more low key. But that's not a criticism as such. It was the fact that they did such a great job that they wanted to do more with it. So that's a real testament to the cast, the quality of the cast they had. But the story was a little bit confusing in places. I think that was one of the things that kind of some of the people that I spoke about were saying about it. But ultimately, no, it was a really good job. Brian Spector produced it. It's his debut as a sole production for him. He's invested and he's been a co-producer on many, many shows, including Come From Away. So he's worked with Rachel before. But like I said, it was really fun. A really enjoyable night out. And I do hope there's life for it somewhere in the West End and beyond. Maybe in the US, they might do some more of it. There's probably more choices, different cities, maybe go to Chicago or something. But for London, it'd be interesting to see what they do with it next. And moving on from Wild About You, I caught up with Joel and Elizabeth, who are 2 of the main cast in Standing at the Sky's Edge. Elizabeth plays Joy and Joel plays Harry. And honestly, it was a really fun chat. Apologies again for slight sound issues maybe because we were in the lobby area first and then we got moved into a room with an air conditioning unit. It was actually literally halfway through the interview. Absolutely fine, but it was a really nice chat with 2 wonderful young rising stars and this is what they had to say.
I'm Elizabeth Ayodele and you're listening to Theatre Audience Podcast.
I'm backstage at the Gillian Lynn Theatre where Standing at the Sky's Edge is currently playing with a couple of cast members. I've got
Elizabeth Ayodele
and
Joel Harper-Jackson.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
So can you tell us a little bit about your roles in Standing at the Sky's Edge and what drew you to these characters? Let's start with you, Elizabeth.
I play Joy in the show and I could say that I was at the beginning just reading like scenes as you do when you go to an audition. You don't always get a full script, so like just tiny little snippets of this person's life, and I think I when reading it was always like, oh, she's just got so much going on, but also she grows so much throughout the course of the show, and I think that's a wonderful thing to be able to play. So the minute I did have the full script in hand, I was like, oh yeah, this is a nice big challenge. And it's been amazing. Yeah.
Excellent. Joel?
I play Harry. He is, we meet him in the 60s. He's set to be the youngest steelwork foreman in Sheffield history. So he has a very bright, promising future ahead of him. And as the show goes on and his world is hit with Thatcherism, he slowly starts to decline and become a shell of his former self. And it just gets, not to spoil anything, it gets worse from then on. And I don't know what drew me to him. I've never played anything like Harry before. I always want to try and do roles as different as possible from the last in order to make you nice and rounded. I heard about the show years ago. My friend was in it up in Sheffield, and it was a northern musical taking the country by storm. I was like, a northern musical? Why am I not involved? Mm-hmm. And then I saw it at the National. I thought it was great. And then the opportunity came up, and I'd be stupid not to do it.
With that in mind, though, this play is known for its powerful storytelling and the emotional depth. So how do you prepare? How did you prepare these characters? Because did you see it at the National as well?
I didn't get a chance to see it at the National, no. it's my one heartbreak. But, I mean, for me, it worked out anyway, because I think having not seen it, I only had my own lens. I had literally nothing else to go off. And I think in terms of preparation, it's kind of just like you build everything from scratch when you get a script. You know, you don't really have a full idea. And I knew for some months before. So once we started rehearsals, I was like, oh, I can't wait to just read it with other people, because all I have is my own ideas. And it was really quite slow and steady. And it took a while to build. And sometimes I still feel like, oh, there's so much more to still be found. But that's the gift of good writing. You kind of don't get a chance to just settle in what it is, because actually there's always more. Yeah.
So you're always finding new nuances of your character.
100%. Yeah. Chris has like written it. And you can see her hard work in the text. But also working with like such a massive company, but like everyone's so incredible. And so you kind of couldn't take a backseat even if you wanted to. Like, you prepare as thoroughly as possible. And I think from the very beginning for me, that was like just reading it as much as possible, and then playing all different possibilities before being like, oh, maybe that's what that version is. Never remembering my blocking was one of my ways to get ready, because I'd just be in rehearsal. I'd go, so I go there now, do I? Nah, doesn't feel right. and then we got to the stage part, and yeah, it's been quite a long preparation, but a good one.
What about you, Joel?
Very much that, Elizabeth.
You've seen the show before, so you had an idea of who the character was, but what was your take on the character?
Well,
because you're from up north.
I'm from the wrong side of the Pennines, apparently. I'm from Stoke. So again, very working class family. My dad's a builder. My mum has done every job under the sun. We lived in a mining cottage in a little village in the middle of nowhere. Going up to Sheffield on our school trip, the National took us up to Sheffield to see the place, was really transformational for me. Mm-hmm. To be in that place and walk those streets and walk those floors and be in the pub where Harry's character would have been was very impactful. But for me, it was talking to the older generation, specifically men of that time, that social background and how they dealt with trauma and the bad stuff in their life. So talking to my dad's 76 now, so he was all through that. And family members. So I did draw on a lot of that. It's a story which is very close to home, with alcoholism and things like that. So I've drawn on personal experience, I guess, as hard as it has been to do that and have things go on during the run. But it's in some ways been slightly cathartic. Mm. Read what you will of that. Mm. But yeah, it's been really difficult, but also wonderful. And before, like my pre-show preparation is, I always just remind myself that these are real people's stories that we're telling. There's so many characters in the show, and it's quite difficult as actors to jump straight into the center of that character, center of that emotion, and articulate what needs to be done. So I don't think it's something, a play that we can go into meekly. You really have to go into this full force with the complete emotion. So that's my thing that kind of keeps me on the front foot, is these are real people's lives and we owe it to them.
Everything. I mean, yeah, I would agree so much. But also because I think, like you were saying, knowing the people of that generation, when we did go to Sheffield and we were talking to them, I just thought, this is everything. And they deserve their story to be told. And, you know, their voices aren't ones that we would typically see in the West End or hear of in the West End. I didn't know a show like this before this. Do you know what I mean? And I thought, that's so powerful. The things that they went through, the things they've endured, but not just the things they've endured, because, for example, my characters come from a war-torn country, and the conversations that this country is having now around refugees and whether we should support them and things like that. And it made my heart break to think about how much we are challenging real voices and how much art needs to be there to speak out for these people. Because I think in other mainstream spaces, I'm not sure that we're giving them the voice that they deserve. But that's what I just have to echo what you said about going to Sheffield, how it was so amazing, because it just like boosts you and it motivates you in a completely different way. Yeah.
So how do you think the music has enhanced the storytelling? I mean, what's your experience performing with live music on stage? Not necessarily musicals, because this, to me, this feels like more of a play with music rather than a musical. Yeah. So obviously you both got an extensive career in theatre. But how has this been kind of a different kind of challenge for you as opposed to anything else you've done in the past?
I sing in bands as well as theatre, so which helps. It's been lovely. I feel very much at home with music. It's been lovely to marry the two, because this show, they are separate worlds. The songs aren't written to carry the narrative through. It's Richard's songs, taken from his 7 studio albums. So the when I first watched it, I didn't understand who Richard Hawley was. I didn't, if I'm being very transparent, I didn't know where he's from. I didn't know that all of his music is completely and utterly Sheffield. It's only once I started doing the show and researched it, I was like, oh, hang on, so he's from Sheffield. All of these songs are about this place. It's about that bar. It's about that brothel. It's about that old woman who lived there for years and then has been kicked out. And these were of his studio albums. The producers and the creative team are very intellectually and very cleverly handpicked these songs and put them into very clever places. It's only as I've gone on and realized that, wow, this is a very intelligent piece. And I don't think you quite realize the gravity of that unless you are from Sheffield and you know Richard's music. So that's why, for me, and it's not just in the music, I think it's in the staging, there's little Easter eggs of little things, like they mention polish some concrete and put this place on Doctor Who and you lot think it's Nirvana. And they put an actor in one of the back scenes dressed as Jodie Whittaker's Doctor Who. The show is laced with very intelligent little bits of gold dust, and you won't necessarily see it on the first time. And it's like that with the actors as well. It's the gift that keeps on giving, because as it goes on, I'm realizing more and more. Today we watched our understudy run of the understudies and saw the big picture for the first time. And it was so insightful, because you realize, that cleverly links up with that moment. And yeah, I think it's different, like Girl from the North Country. But if you do your research and give it some time, you realise quite how clever this is.
Collaboration in theatre is key. Would you agree?
Yeah.
So can you talk about your experience working with the other cast members? Because obviously some of the cast have come from the original production and some are new. So how's that experience been? Obviously you two are both new members. So how's that kind of been in the rehearsal process?
What's funny is that we're both new and we're both with people who were in it last time.
Oh, yeah. The two,
and then there's a few returning cast members. But they're the two principals who stayed. And I was like, me and Joel are living the same life. But it's, I feel that over time I've come to really understand it to be a massive gift, because there are little insights and things that are, I mean, when you first read something, but also when you're first approaching something, there's just no way to be able to get to the depth and the scope of absolutely everything. And so I think I've had, luckily, you know, a lot of support in terms of, oh, that moment actually usually can, you know, manifest in this way, or, but similarly, Sam has been very playful and open. And so I haven't been glued to anything that was done before, but I have had someone who to support me in terms of understanding certain depths of each scene. And I think everyone in the company in general has been so inviting and so encouraging that this is ours, and that it doesn't have to replicate what was done before. It doesn't have to exist as it once was. I mean, there are some things that have worked for them previously, and so in certain numbers you will go where the previous person went, but beyond that I haven't felt stalled or stopped or put in a box in any way. And I think sometimes when you're coming into something that already exists, there's a pressure. And I was certainly feeling like maybe there'll be a pressure to be that other person. And no one has validated that. It all just ended up falling into place. And I think that's really good, but also a really good reason for audiences to see it if you've seen it before, because it couldn't be a replica. It's the kind of show that has to continue living and breathing in a new way. And I think, you know, everything that has been done to shift certain moments, or, you know, encourage certain narratives, or just change and tweak little bits, has been so fabulous to witness. And I've had a good time doing it, luckily. But also from your partner, from Rachel, I've felt so much support on that side. And so I think I'm just so glad that it has ended up the way it's been.
Mm.
Yeah.
We've been very lucky.
Like, yeah.
The girl who plays my wife, Rachel, is definitely the mum of the group. She is, I think she's the only company member that will be...
Her and Ali.
Her and Ali. So they've done it four times now. So, of course, she's had different actors, and I expected a certain level of, this is how we do it.
Mm-hmm.
Being very honest, but then I didn't get that.
Mm-hmm.
She was super collaborative and came to this very fresh. And I also felt like that from the director. Rob Hastie has just been so generous and open. I've not felt like I've been stepping into anyone's shoes at any point in this. And yeah, with Rachel, I felt like I've known her for years.
Mm-hmm.
We were snogging each other's face off within the first day on this inner scene. So there was no time. The rehearsal process was so quick. I mean, we're essentially doing three plays here, three stories, and there's no time to mess around. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, we got on like a house on fire, and we just had to go, okay, well, this is what we're doing. Right, no time, let's just do it. And it's been fab. Yeah, very, very lucky. I have to say it, this is my favourite cast I've ever worked with.
Exclusive
to that one, yeah. So talking about the kind of the casting rehearsal space as well, is there anything you've done in rehearsal which was like, wasn't allowed by Robert, as it were? Like you kind of tried things out and you think, oh no, that was actually really bad, or I don't know, anything in rehearsal that you kind of feel that didn't quite translate well on stage, or anything that was like, no, definitely not doing that? Was you allowed to play with Star?
We were very much allowed to play, but I don't think it was not on my behalf anyway.
I don't remember there ever being a moment of like, oh no, that can't go, or that won't work. Or I mean, there was one time where I looked at the wrong person in a scene, so he went, please make sure not to do that. But it's because you have to be so specific when there are different things going on, so that everyone can grab the story as it's supposed, not as it's supposed to be, but so that you can make it as clear for the audience as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the minute I then went, oh, wouldn't it be funny if I just looked at Joel really quickly? It's like that's the minute that the story drops. And so there was obviously things like that, but never creatively, it was nothing like that won't work, or that can't, nothing like that at all.
That's the thing. I think Stuart Burt, casting director, has assembled a group of actors who are very much on the same page as each other, and also as the creative team. It's not been anything like that, I don't think. No dramas. There's actually not. There was no raised voices. There was no, can you not do this? It honestly, the whole rehearsal process, which could have been quite stressful because of the lack of time that we felt we had, because it was such a mammoth show, was very easy.
Yeah.
Weirdly, but it was.
Because on stage, there are some moments where the generations, as it were, are crossing over. There's the kitchen scene, around the table stuff. You're pretty much all around the table, but at three different storylines. Has that ever gone wrong? I mean, like, have you ever kind of, I don't know, bumped into Rachel when you wasn't supposed to, for instance, and stuff like that?
I had something the other day when Rachel Louise Miller, one of our lovely covers, was on to play Poppy, and it was in Stormer coming, and everyone moves at the same time into but just before that, we hadn't worked out
the traffic,
and she slammed her suitcase into me.
Oh, no!
But of course, I'm supposed to be in my own little world, so I just kind of went, "What was that?" And then kept it. So
love it.
The listeners can't see, but I kind of faked as if like a ghost had walked into me. It was some terrible acting, but given the circumstances, I don't know what else.
What else could have happened?
Because it is that kind of show that kind of thing could happen at any moment, because you are doing your own thing and there are lots of crossovers.
Yeah.
I mean, the stage is big, but it's not that big when you've got two or three kind of like lots of people going in and out, especially the dining area, because it's not that big in that table.
Yes.
So anytime a recover goes on for that their track, that specific scene, we always rehearse,
gets run. Yeah.
Because it's so intricate. Mm-hmm. And when you get it right, it's absolutely fantastic.
Mm.
But it does take drilling and rehearsing.
A lot of mental strength.
Yeah. that's the complex one.
Yeah.
At least you've got your get out, you know, you just think, oh, I've been bumped into something. It doesn't really matter, you know.
That's so weird. But Harry was drunk at that point, so I just went down to...
We buy it. Joel can sell everything.
The play has received critical acclaim for its portrayal of community and resilience. Okay. So how do you think the audiences have connected with these themes, especially in today's world? You touched on it earlier with the whole thing about immigration, Rwanda and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, how relevant is the whole miners thing, for instance, and stuff within today's society, do you think? I mean, is this story set in a certain time zone? Obviously, three time zones, but the initial story is set in a certain specific era, which we don't really have anymore, but we kind of do in other ways. So how do you think audiences are kind of like relating to that?
I think, like you say, in some ways, I think the younger generation won't necessarily get it. And I think it's a story that is very working class and very traditionally northern. But like you say, we see it in other ways. Now, the cost of living, everything's so expensive. Like, you only need to turn on the TV to see that so many people from so many walks of life are doing the best that they can to stay afloat. So I think for resilience, struggle, grit and tenacity, I think it's just something which is fundamentally human. We all understand that in our own way. A line I always think of in the show is my wife's, she says, right onwards. And I'm not going to ruin it for the listener, but had terrible things happen to her. And I think that is something that we can all, in our own way, relate to.
I would agree. I mean, I think if you haven't, because I was born in London and my parents are immigrants, and I think about the story of the miners and only ever having a very limited education on it at school, there are sort of so many gaps in my knowledge about the effect that had. And so I think when you're able to witness it from a personal point of view with these real stories, I think it resonates even more. Because it may be not something that you personally witnessed and encountered, but it's something that you can see such a strong effect of. And that effect kind of has still carried on over time. You know, Thatcherism might be gone, but actually we are sometimes working under governments that are in some ways working in opposition to the working class. Mm. And I think right now, when we look at, you know, the NHS strikes and things like that, these aren't people that are immune to pain and grief, and, you know, they hold our country up with their industry, but, you know, they are cut and they are pushed. And I think no matter what your age is, you will see it in some way, shape or form, if you're open to that, if you're, you know, coming to the show with like an open enough mind. And it took me a while because like I said, I had such a limited knowledge of it. But, you know, like we said today, watching the cover run just made it hit so much more. Yeah, I think it is a relatable part, even if it isn't something that you immediately identify with.
Is this the first time you've seen the cover run? So you've never seen the show before?
No.
Obviously, you saw the show, but you, I mean, or like, as your company.
Yeah, and well, there's so much going on in the show.
Yes.
Like, even on the first viewing, you miss a lot.
Yeah.
So now that we know the ins and outs, we know the relationships, the dynamics, to then have that story in you, but then get to sit out and watch it, it was so informative. It was so impressive, and just, yeah, it made you very thankful for where we are and what we're doing. Yeah, very lucky.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Joel. Thank you, Elizabeth, for taking time out before the show. And yeah, hope to see you again soon.
Why not grab a ticket to one of the shows mentioned in this podcast? Tune in next time and recommend us to your friends and family.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. Until the next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.